From exile in Lebanon, former Nissan boss Carlos Ghosn gives details about his dramatic exit from company and country. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Shock and frozen trauma, the only feelings Carlos Ghosn remembers feeling back in 2018 when he was arrested at Tokyo Airport. His detention centered around allegations by Nissan that he understated his annual salary and misused company funds, all claims Mr. Ghosn denies. For more than a year, the former chief executive spent long periods in custody or under house arrest in the Japanese capital. Many in his circle feared it could take years to get to trial, and if convicted, Mr. Ghosn faced 15 years in jail. In a country with a 99.4% conviction rate, Mr. Ghosn said taking chances wasn't an option. He told the BBC's Simon Jack why a large music equipment box was chosen to smuggle him out of the country.
As the boss of Nissan, Renault and the world's largest car manufacturing alliance, Carlos Ghosn was accustomed to globetrotting in a private jet, but it was bundled inside a musical instrument box that he made a dramatic escape from Japanese authorities.
My Japanese lawyers told me, look, don't count on a fair trial. But we think that with all the arguments we have, with all the proofs we have, we can get you acquitted. But frankly, I started to doubt what my lawyers were telling me when I saw that the prosecutors were asking for very punishing conditions of a home residence. All of these led me to say, if I want to have any hope to have one day a normal life, I'm going to have to leave.
He denies any wrongdoing and said nothing in his high-powered career matched the stress of his final moments in Japan.
The plane was scheduled to take off at 11 p.m. that night. We were ready, and I was in the box in the rear of the plane probably around 10:30. And these 30 minutes waiting in the box in the plane, waiting for the plane to take off, were probably the longest period of wait I've ever experienced in my life.
Generally credited with saving Nissan, he sometimes behaved more like a head of state than head of a company. But his spectacular fall was, he insists, not hubris, but as a result of a bitter power struggle between Nissan and Renault, which still owns 43% of the Japanese company.
They turned on me because they were very upset by the behavior of the French state, who doubled its voting right as a shareholder of Renault, while at the same time opposing any voting right to Nissan. So getting rid of me could happen through a board meeting, but if it was only a board meeting, I would come back at the head of Renault, and owning 43% of the shares of Nissan, I can turn the table on them. So it was necessary that the elimination would be radical.
Both Nissan and the Japanese authorities deny he was unfairly treated. His former colleague and confidant at Nissan, Greg Kelly, is still detained, along with two Americans who helped him escape.
I feel sorry for all the people who are victim of the hostage justice system in Japan, all of them.
He may have escaped Japan, but now lives in exile in Beirut under armed guard. He is still working on a legal defence, but it's not the retirement Carlos Ghosn was expecting.
That's Simon Jack reporting there. Checking the numbers now, global stock benchmarks are tilting lower this morning as worries persist about the impact of rising inflation. The Pan-European Stock 600 index is off 0.2%, taking a cue from Asian stock markets, which ended down in the wide range of 0.2% to 1%. There are a number of challenges facing the Olympics set to begin in Tokyo in 10 days. Perhaps the biggest is the impact of the pandemic. A new coronavirus cluster has been identified at a Japanese hotel housing a number of Brazil's athletes. Seven hotel staff tested positive for the virus, but Olympic officials say those affected have not been in contact with the Brazilian delegation. Out of 8,000 COVID tests carried out, just three have been positive, according to the organizing committee. But as questions over the games continue to swirl, another controversy is brewing. It's over a new super shoe, which has led to a surge in track and field records. The BBC's Ivana Davidovich has that story.
Wow, 143.64! That is the fastest time in the world this year.
As sport emerged from the coronavirus pandemic, the athletics genie has not only got out of the bottle, but is granting wishes at a record rate. Just in June, Dutch runner Sifan Hassan smashed the women's 10,000-meter record by 10 seconds. But just 2 days later, Ethiopia's Leta Senbet Gide went 5 seconds faster. What unites them? Super spikes.
They do feel incredibly different. They give my legs a little extra pop.
Madeline Kelly is the 2019 Canadian 800-meter champion. On the day we chatted, she was selected to go to her first Olympics.
The feedback has been so good about them. Competitor brands have actually said to their athletes, if we haven't made a spike that's comparable, you can wear Nike's shoes while competing, even though you're sponsored by, let's say, Brooks, for example.
While Madeline doesn't believe the recent record-breaking performances are all down to footwear, other athletes and coaches are much more suspicious. Oregon-based Peter Thompson, he's been a coach to top-level runners and previously worked in shoe development for the likes of Nike and Hoka.
If you look at the NCAA championships, 9 out of the first 10 steeplechasers ran massive personal bests. And a very significant factor is the effect of the shoes.
So, if it's true that these super spikes are helping athletes reach super results, is that a problem?
My name is Mason Furlick. I run the 3,000-meter steeplechase for the United States. Just qualified for the Tokyo Olympics. Yeah, the Nike spikes, they're definitely the best pair of track spikes I've ever worn. The spike is becoming such a performance advantage that now the spike is dictating the outcome of races.
When the starting gun is fired on the Tokyo Olympics, after a year's delay and an enormous amount of uncertainty, runners like Mason Furlick will not leave anything to chance.
The BBC's Ivana Davidovich reporting there, and in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.